Welcome to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast Series, delivering fresh insights and perspectives around major accounting and financial reporting developments across a range of timely topics. We thank you for joining today.
Hello, I'm Karen Silverman, a partner at KPMG, and in this episode, we're going to chat about recent developments related to accounting for goodwill. Joining me today is Nick Bergmeier, a fellow partner in the firm's Department of Professional Practice. And we also have a very special guest, Dave Yates, who's a managing director here at KPMG, but also is currently serving as a practice fellow at the FASB. So he'll be able to share his wealth of knowledge about developments at the FASB with us. And thanks so much to both of you for being here today. Goodwill is one of those topics that seems to come up every so often with regard to the appropriate accounting model. The debate is usually around an impairment model versus an amortization model. Today, we're going to spend a bit of time covering ASU 2021-03, which provides an accounting alternative for evaluating triggering events for private companies. Then we're going to talk about the ongoing projects that could impact all companies at both the FASB and the IASB. Nick, could you start us off today with some very high-level basics about the current model for accounting for goodwill?
Yeah, I'd love to. So the general model for goodwill, so goodwill is an asset that generally comes on your books in a business combination. It is not amortized, but it is tested for impairment. Now, for this discussion, I'm just going to assume that everybody has adopted ASU 2017-04. That ASU simplified the impairment test by moving it from a two-step test to a single-step test. And while that ASU is not effective for everyone, most people have early adopted. Now, the one-step test compares the fair value of the reporting unit, which is our unit of account for testing goodwill, to the carrying amount of that reporting unit. And when the carrying amount exceeds fair value, goodwill is impaired by that excess amount. Now, this impairment test is performed at least annually, but more frequently if there is a triggering event. And when a triggering event occurs, the test is performed at that event date. Now, a triggering event is an event or circumstance indicating that it's more likely than not that the fair value of the reporting unit is less than its carrying value. And it actually, it requires a lot of judgment. But maybe some common examples include a decline in the market for the company's products or services. Maybe you lose a major customer. It also could be a sustained decrease in share price. This could happen in an economic downturn like we experienced in, you know, the first part of 2020 with COVID or back to the financial crisis. Now, that's quite a high-level summary, but anyone who has done this test knows it can get quite complex given the fair value estimates involved. I will point out there's one exception to the model there, is that private companies can elect to amortize goodwill, generally over 10 years, and only test for impairment on a triggering event.
Great. Thanks, Nick. So now that we're all on the same page, let's talk a little bit more about those triggering events you mentioned. While I can see how there'd be a need to assess those pretty frequently for a public company who reports to investors on a quarterly basis, how does the FASB think about this for private companies? Dave, wasn't there a recent change to how private companies or not-for-profits could think about this?
Yeah, there was. The board had heard from certain stakeholders concern about the cost and complexity of private companies evaluating these triggering events at interim dates when those entities only report annually. So the board decided to add a project to its agenda to explore an alternative for private and non-for-profit entities to defer that triggering event evaluation date to the end of the reporting period. The feedback received from certain private company users led the board to determine that impairments are more relevant when they're closely associated with the timing of the overall financial information being reported. So for an example, if there was a triggering event or an event that occurred in June, and you're a private company that only files on an annual basis, the users had said, well, I would like to know what the facts and circumstances related to that event look like as of the end of the year, assuming that is still a triggering event at the end of the year. So the board issued ASU 2021-03 at the end of March to address that concern. And this alternative is applicable to all goodwill that is subsequently measured under subtopic 350-20. And it moves the triggering event evaluation date to the end of the reporting period, regardless if that reporting period is interim or annual. And the transition for this ASU is prospective from fiscal years beginning after December 15th, 2019. So if you have a fiscal year, a calendar year 2020 still open, you can still utilize this alternative if you so wish.
Thanks, Dave. That does seem like it will relieve some of the burden on private companies who report less frequently than public companies. Nick, maybe just one point of clarification. Does this also apply to other non-financial assets that get assessed for impairment, or does it only relate to goodwill?
No, that's a really important question. So the board actually considered that and whether or not this alternative should be extended to other types of assets. For example, long-lived assets, your PP&E or your amortizable intangibles are tested for impairment upon triggering events. Also, indefinite-lived intangibles, like a trademark or a brand, those are tested annually for impairment or on a triggering event. So the triggers for those assets are very similar to goodwill triggers, and it's fairly common that if you have a trigger for one, you have triggers for some of the others. However, the board decided not to extend the alternative beyond goodwill. So for example, an entity that elected the alternative would need to still evaluate the triggering events for long-lived assets throughout the reporting period, but then goodwill only at the end of the reporting period. And now, because the triggers are pretty similar, some companies prefer to do all the testing as of the same date. So that might be something to consider when evaluating whether or not a company wants to elect the alternative, because practically it could lead to situations where you're doing the test for one asset at one date and test for goodwill at another.
Oh, that's an interesting point about the timing of those tests. I hadn't realized that might occur. Thanks so much for that clarification. Okay, I'd like to spend a bit of time on the current project at the FASB related to goodwill. Nick, maybe we can start with a summary of the project and where the board stands on it. And it would also be really interesting to hear maybe a bit of the history on this topic as a whole.
Sure. Well, the history of goodwill goes back hundreds of years, but I'll just kind of start here from our current model, which originated back in 2001 with the issuance of FAS 142. And the big event from FAS 142 was that it moved us from an amortization model to an impairment model for goodwill. And if you're around then, you may remember this was accompanying just in general with major changes to the overall business combination model in FAS 141.
You know, what I think is interesting, Nick, is goodwill since 1940, roughly, has changed about every 20 years. So it's gone in this big loop, and now we're almost exactly 20 years later from 142, and it's potentially changing again.
Well, I'm glad some things work like clockwork. But even though, you know, maybe the major changes are happening every roughly 20 years, since 142 came out, it seems like FASB has always had something about goodwill on its agenda. Since FAS 142, they have issued several updates to try to simplify this impairment model. However, they keep getting feedback from stakeholders that more needs to be done. Now, the current project on their agenda, I would say, is driven by two things. One, preparer feedback that the model is costly to apply. And then two, mixed feedback from investors on the benefits of the model. Now, all this feedback resulted in the current project, the board's currently in initial stages of, where they are taking another look at the subsequent accounting for goodwill, and then also, in general, the accounting for certain intangible assets. Now, with goodwill, they're not looking at changing the day one accounting. It would still be recognized in a business combination, and it'd still be measured as a residual or the excess of the purchase price over the fair value of identifiable net assets acquired. But they are looking at ways to balance the cost and benefit equation in the model. And that may mean moving to amortization. It could also mean simplifying the impairment test. With intangibles, the board's considering whether or not certain intangibles, such as customer relationships, should be subsumed into goodwill. And then they're also looking at ways to maybe improve the information that could be provided to investors and users around goodwill and business combinations, maybe through disclosures. Now, to date, the deliberations have primarily focused on goodwill, and specifically the debate about whether goodwill should be amortized and over what period. And it's been very interesting to watch, but to date, the board has tentatively decided to amortize goodwill straight line over 10 years, unless the entity can justify the use of a period other than that 10-year default. And I think a key word here is tentative, because they could still change their mind as they continue to flesh out the entire model.
Thanks, Nick. Obviously, an amortization method would be a substantial change from the current impairment model and would have a pretty significant impact on a lot of companies. Under this model, would impairment testing still be relevant? Dave, maybe you can tell us how the board is thinking about that.
Sure. So at a recent meeting, the board discussed removing the annual requirement to test goodwill for impairment. However, the board emphasized the importance of the triggering event evaluation process and does believe that goodwill impairment testing is still a very important and very relevant component of the overall accounting for goodwill. I also want to point out that at the same meeting, the board also discussed aligning the triggering event evaluation date with the end of the reporting period, whether that's interim or annual, similar to the private company ASUs that we had discussed earlier. And finally, the board did debate the unit of account for testing goodwill, whether to remain at the reporting unit or move it up to the operating segment level. But again, these were just more leanings, and it'll be interesting to see how the project develops as it moves forward.
Okay, great. Thanks for that update, Dave. Now, I believe the IASB also has a project ongoing related to goodwill. Can you give us some background on that project as well?
Sure. So the IASB published a discussion paper similar to an invitation to comment that the FASB put out a year or so ago related to the board's initial views on a broader business combination project. However, as part of this project, the IASB will also be evaluating all aspects related to the subsequent accounting for goodwill. They'll be exploring how to better provide information that investors can use to hold companies accountable for acquisitions. The broader project surrounding acquisitions and focuses not only on the subsequent accounting, but also on the actual impairment test. And then there's also a focus on disclosures as well for the subsequent accounting. There's also been leanings by the IASB board regarding what to do with goodwill, and it appears to be somewhat split. So similar to the FASB's project, it'll be interesting to see how those two projects converge or if there's some differences in a final standard.
Thanks, Dave. It will be interesting to see if this becomes another area of divergence between the U.S. and international standards, or if they're able to come to some kind of consensus on the accounting. Before we wrap up, Nick, can you give us some things that companies should be considering right now? Any action items?
Sure. There are a few. So for private companies and not-for-profit entities, those companies, they need to evaluate, or they should be evaluating, whether or not they would like to elect the new accounting alternative. That alternative can be applied to annual financial statements that have not been issued or are available for issuance. So, for example, a private company with a June 30th year end can still elect the new private company alternative to those financial statements. You know, I would caution, as part of that evaluation, the entity should consider any plans for an IPO, because in the event the company needs to retrofit its financial statements to make them SEC compliant, the company would need to unwind the alternative and apply the general model without the use of hindsight, which, as we all know, can be challenging. But those considerations are really no different than the considerations needed to elect other private company alternatives. And then for everyone else, I mean, I would just encourage them to continue to monitor the project, both really the FASB and the IASB project, because this really has a potential to be a monumental change, as well as, you know, maybe even potential divergence between U.S. GAAP and IFRS. And then if you monitor it, you know, make sure or at least consider writing a comment letter so that the FASB has the necessary feedback they need to issue a final standard.
Great. Thanks, Nick. Nick and Dave, thank you both so much for your time today. As Dave mentioned, this topic seems to change every 20 years or so, and moving to an amortization model would have some pretty significant impacts for companies. So it will be interesting to see how these projects develop. I really appreciate both of your time today and the thoughtful and insightful commentary you provided.
Thanks, Karen. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Yeah, thanks. It was fun.
Great. If our listeners would like more information on ASU 2021-03, we have a defining issues document that gives a good summary of the key provisions. You can find this and plenty of other information on our website. Thanks again for being here, Nick and Dave.
Thank you for listening to this KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. For more in-depth financial reporting developments, analysis, and podcast episodes, please visit frv.kpmg.us and be sure to subscribe today. Also, we're social. You can also follow us on LinkedIn at KPMG Financial Reporting View or with hashtag KPMGFRV.